is the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. It is our pleasure to be with Edward Lengo, Bill Russell, and I, Paula. You have, in your wonderful story-based look at this horrendous thing called the First World War, from the perspective of American soldiers and German soldiers in this Meuse-Argonne campaign in 1918, which is very much toward the end of the war and part of why the war ends. You have this line that farm boys had become men and men had become comrades. And to me, that was an essential part of this story, was these farm boys or city slickers. Mm-hmm. One guy is a Philadelphia playwright or something. Mm-hmm. That you'd taken the essential American experience, which is all kinds of people from all kinds of walks of life. They grow up in this battle, and then they bond to each other. And in a way, that was one of the things that helped me get through these terrible, terrible stories, to remember that people can do that, that we can grow up, that we can become comrades, that there is, it's like democracy, and that America had done something really important in this mad encounter.
Right. And that's one of the things that has always fascinated me. I have to say, I've written some other books on history and George Washington. This book I really wrote for love of the subject, and the fascination in particular psychologically of how these young guys, and women as well, experienced many horrible things. Young women who won over and served as nurses or as ambulance drivers, as the case may be.
Or YMCA showing
right.
up and giving out
sure.
chocolate.
Sure. And for them, that was also a transforming experience. But now, particularly for the doughboys, you know, how they encountered this and how they were able individually to overcome or not to overcome, in many cases, what they went through and how they grew. And most soldiers, I mean, the first thing to say is that there was no one way that every soldier responds to battle. Each is going to respond to war in his or her own individual way. And that was true of the doughboys too. But for, I would say, most of them, they said the war was horrible. The Meuse-Argonne in particular was horrible. But it wasn't all bad. There were some redeeming aspects of being in a war. And the one major redeeming aspect is the comradeship, is that bond that soldiers form when they're fighting together. They're fighting side by side, which is completely different from any other bond, you know, in the human experience. It's completely different from the bond of man and wife. It's completely different from the bond of close friends. You know, it's something that transcends that. And all of them said that, you know, that there was something in that made it, if not worthwhile, at least had a redeeming quality to it.
You quote, I think, from Patton's autobiography. I think it's Patton, right, who wrote a little doggerel poetry about just how wonderful war is and mm-hmm. how terrible it is when we don't have a war and how much he's looking forward to having another one. And he got it. He got his wish.
Yeah.
And I found myself thinking, I mean, there are people for whom that is the defining experience. That is what they live for.
Right.
You know, they're essentially the warrior class.
Right.
And we've had those for, you know as
always.
Long. Probably for 180,000 years, however long old the species is. And I found myself thinking, you know, maybe we should just create a place for those people. Because you need them sometimes, but there are people on both sides that have that
right.
attitude.
Right.
The problem is they keep wanting to drag the rest of us into it.
Right.
Both, you know, both military, but also civilians. And, you know, there are times when some of those attributes are admirable, but they are dangerous to a civilization. They're dangerous to a democracy. They're dangerous to a people. And sometimes I think we just ought to find a place for them so they can go out and if they must, kill one another
right.
and get them off of our playground.
One of the most, I think, moving stories in here is I found the account by a young corporal with the 1st Division, Donald Kyler, I think his name was, who during the war was a real no-nonsense, gung-ho soldier who really enjoyed combat. Now, he really enjoyed fighting. But he writes after the war, as he begins to reflect back on that, he says, that turned me into something bad, into a kind of person who's dangerous even to civilization, is dangerous to democracy. And he felt like he was, because of what he had become in that war, that he was only a teenager. Because of what he had become, he felt himself really that he's in some ways had become a menace.
Well,
he felt terrible about it.
His word was authoritarian, I think.
Right.
And effectively, he had become what he had been fighting against.
Right, and I think his moment of seeing that, it was really, really touching to me, is when he was coming back home on the troop ship. And now he had always believed in absolutely iron discipline. But on this ship, one of his buddies has snuck on board a miniature dachshund. You know, all the soldiers, and they would find pets or whatever running around the trenches, and they'd bring them home. They brought home this miniature dachshund, which were not supposed to be on the ships, brought it up for a walk on board at nighttime. An officer caught him, an officer who had the same kind of view of discipline, iron discipline, as Kyler. So he ordered the dog to be thrown overboard. And as Kyler watched, you know, this dog trying to swim to catch up and watch it die, you know, that brought something into his heart, and he thought, what have I become? Really, how can I bring this cruelty back with me?
And you'd say time and time and time again the savagery of this. And you talk about your cousin, Colonel York?
He was promoted to sergeant.
He was promoted to sergeant. He was corporal at the time.
You talk about how many people he killed before his conscience kicked back in. You talk about over and over again that that on both sides, people just going out and murdering.
Right.
This was no longer war. This was revenge. This was evil, more or less incarnate.
Right.
And the savagery of it was truly overwhelming.
Right. Now, for most of them, like for York, though, their humanity remained. You know, the story with York, we always hear about his bravery and how he shot the Germans with his 45 and captured 132 prisoners. But we don't hear the story of what he did the next day, is that he felt awful about the people that he had killed. And he begs his officer, his captain, to be allowed to go back to the battlefield and see if he can find anybody to save. He said he didn't care if it was an American, German, who it was, he wanted to save somebody, and he's walking around this battlefield calling out for somebody's name and in tears because of this guilt that he had. And again, everybody reacts differently. And I'd want to emphasize that, is that many of them, you know, they felt awful. They were forced to fight during the battle, but then afterwards they had different ways of dealing with it.
You also quote from Pershing's autobiography, which I found clarifying, because he was, you know, just the apotheosis of spirit and honor above all else, and if the honor meant, you know, killing and being killed, so be it. But at the end of his life, he sort of changed his story. He redefined honor, which I found very interesting.
Right, he did. And Pershing's story is complex, too. I'd like to feel that I'm treating him, too, as a human being, though I find him culpable in many respects for what his soldiers went through. Still, he's a human being, and he was in many ways defined by his early experiences, losing his wife and his daughters in a fire, which was
at
so...
At the Presidio.
At the Presidio, which was a terrible, you know, wrenching experience, as you can imagine, but I think his way of dealing with that was to live through willpower alone. And that willpower, that will to succeed, to dominate, took over his life, and I think it guided how he handled his army in the war, because he extended that willpower to all of his soldiers. You have the will to victory, and the will to victory is what gets you through.
At all costs.
At all costs.
I also found it interesting, a story I'd never heard, that he kicked himself upstairs, which...
Remarkable.
Frankly, was, within the context, was probably his finest decision. But how did that come about?
Right. Well, partway through the battle, the battle began September 26th, goes on for 3 weeks of horrendous fighting, during which almost all the casualties took place. 26,000 dead, 100,000 wounded.
Well, this is the Meuse-Argonne.
The Meuse-Argonne. Mid-October, it's become really such a charnel house that Pershing sees that he's not able to handle it. There are eyewitnesses who say that he's breaking down under the strain. But also he senses that that he doesn't really understand how to manage this battle. And he kicks himself upstairs. He moves to a higher position where he can kind of generally oversee the American Expeditionary Force, but his primary responsibility will be to deal with the politicians. And he puts Hunter Liggett in command of First Army, which is fighting the Meuse-Argonne. Hunter Liggett is a much more sympathetic character to me because he understands that we need to adapt our tactics and our strategy to this type of battlefield.
Well, and the first thing he did was go out and up to the front lines, or as close as he could reasonably get, and find out what was really going on. And I think we call it intelligence.
Right.
With both senses of the word.
Right.
Let us return to be intelligent in both senses of the word in just a moment with Edward Langle. Please join us when we return.